Hi everyone, this is Robert Winter. Thank you for joining us on this blog tour. We're going to do something a little bit different for this one, as you may see from the accompanying narrative. Cale Williams, who is the fantastic narrator of the audiobook of September, has agreed to sit and be interviewed by me. And we're going to talk through some questions that I think are interesting, and I hope you'll find interesting. And then we'll break up that file and put it across the blog tour. So if you want to get the complete interview with Cale, you can just hit the different stops on the blog tour. And then eventually I'll post the entire interview as a single file on my website. But to get us started, we're here obviously talking about the audiobook for September. September was my first book. It came out December 2016. So it's a little over a year old right now. I'm very proud of it. It was a labor of love to write. It's set in Washington and in Provincetown, where I live. And I've done my best to make the towns come to life. September is the story of David James, who is a 48-year-old lawyer, as the story begins. He's a widower. He had been with someone for 15 years, and he lost his lover to cancer a few years before the story begins. He's very lonely, and he has not figured out how to re-enter the world. He injures himself in a sports accident, and he meets Brandon Smith, who is a much younger physical therapist. And sparks fly between the two of them, but it's not an easy path, and it all comes together in September. So the book has been doing well, but I decided it was time to put out an audiobook as well, and contacted Cale, and he agreed to be my narrator, and I think he just did a fantastic job. And so I thought it'd be fun for you to get to hear some of the behind-the-scenes things that go on in audiobook narration. And so I've prepared some questions for Cale, and then we'll just talk through and hopefully get you some interesting information if you like audiobooks. Cale, do you want to say anything before we get started?
No, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And I look forward to just talking about this. This is a really fun book to tackle with you, and I feel honored to be your first narrator to work with. So thank you for trusting me with your words. That's that's a big thing for us as narrators. I think it's a big thing for authors to hand over their work and find a new collaborator, because you've spent so much time by yourself with these characters, within this world, with these words, and to hear it come to life in a different way has got to be a different experience from when you're sitting at a desk writing it.
Absolutely. You hear the voices in your head, you know the way that they talk, and then when someone else begins to give voice to those words, it's interesting, just the different perspective. When I was listening to the proof of the file,
sure,
it just sort of made me listen to the story in an entirely different way. And of course, as an author, I can't help cringing a few times. It's like, oh, I could have said that better. Right. But at the same time, I was surprised actually at how emotional I got listening to some of the scenes that I'd written. Of course, I know the words inside out, but just being able to sit back and hear you kind of act out those characters and their situation was it was powerful. I really enjoyed it. So I hope everybody will take a chance.
I hope so too.
How did you? Yeah, thank you. Yeah. How did you get started in audiobook narration?
Well, I started. My first experience in audio was narrating textbooks for the blind and dyslexic. I got my start as an actor, mostly doing theater work, and then I started doing a lot of commercial work as well. I've done some TV and film work, and I was out of town doing some theater out in Pennsylvania, and I was working with a guy who did some of this work himself. And so he would go back, to his apartment after rehearsal, and he'd be recording these audiobooks in his in his room. And so we started talking about it, and it sounded really interesting to me. So he got me involved with that, and then it was a few years later that I discovered the ACX platform, which is how we've created this book. And I started looking more into those opportunities, and I started getting more into the fiction end of things. And I wasn't when I first started, it was more of a sideline thing. I was still more focused on the theater work I was doing and whatnot. And as I got more into it, just the ability to, I guess, to play every role. It's almost like doing a show and playing every part. And just that aspect of it, to tell this story in a more complete way from start to finish was really exhilarating. And so I latched onto it, and it's become my full-time job now, and I love it.
Well, that's great. Your theater training is obvious in the voices and the the characters and the inflection and the way you set the scene. So that must be very different, though, than standing on a stage and just taking direction and doing your one role and waiting for your cues.
It is different, but I do think that the theater background is really beneficial. But it's definitely different, being on a stage. That communal atmosphere of the theater is there's nothing like it when you're working with other actors in real time and you have an audience that's responding to you. Now my days are spent in a small box talking to myself. So it's a
well,
little
as an author, I'm just going to say I'm in a small box too, just my little office. So.
Sure. So I can relate to the solitary feelings you find, but yeah. It's great. Once you get to the end and you get to share it with people and get the response, it's very rewarding.
What was your first MM romance audiobook?
I got into the male romance world doing a book for Dream Spinner Press called Cinders and Ash. It was by Tara Lane, and it was part of this series she wrote called The Pennymaker Tales. And these books were based on different fairy tales, and I'm bringing those to life in the MM milieu. So the first one was a Cinderella takeoff. And it's funny, I just completed the fourth book in that series just a few weeks ago. So that should be out probably later this month. So that was my first experience. And then I got hooked up with Josh Lanyon maybe a few months after that. And we developed a really great relationship. I did a book called The Mermaid Murders. And I'm actually, that became a series. I'm about to do the third book in that series next month. And that really, that I think opened me up to a lot more opportunities in the MM world, because Josh is very well known in the community, does some really great writing, and entrusted me with some really great projects. And so from that, I was able to branch out and meet other authors, and other authors had heard my work as well. So the referrals from there, and just the exploration of this community, which has embraced me in a wonderful way, has been great.
That's been my experience too. It's just an amazingly welcoming community. When I went to my first GRL conference in 2016, sure. I didn't have a book out yet, but everybody was just open arm and perfectly willing to talk to me. And I made friends of authors and narrators and readers. And so it really is an amazing community. Mermaid Murders was, I think, the first audiobook that I listened to. So I knew your voice, and that's why really excited to get you to do this, because I'm. As I sit here, I'm drawing a blank on the character, but the older agent, I could just hear that voice for David, and so I really liked the way that worked out.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad it did. Yeah, and I've heard great stories about GRL. I'd love to get there. I missed last year's. I heard about it a little too late, I was actually just communicating on Twitter. I got some messages from some fans, some listeners, and some authors that the tickets will be on sale later this month. So
that's right. Yeah, February 17th, in fact. Yeah.
There you go. So I'm getting it on my radar. I'm hoping, I've got a busy summer coming up, but I'm hoping I can carve out some time to, even if it's just for a day, because I was talking to Josh Lanyon, and Josh is going to be down there this year. I think this is the first GRL that Josh is going to be at. So it would be nice to make it there for that.
That would be great. At last year's GRL in Denver, they did a panel of narrators, and TJ Klune hosted that, and that was it was a lot of fun. It was sellout crowd. Everybody was excited because it was also at the very beginning of GRL, but the room was packed. I think people are fascinated by the process, which is why, frankly, it was where the idea came to do this, because I thought it was so interesting that I thought it might be fun to get your take on some of the same things we talked about there.
Oh, great. That's wonderful.
One thing I'm curious about is, MM romance is usually very explicit, and I'm wondering if that caused you any problems to get used to narrating those. I would imagine when you're doing your traditional theater training, it's not usually about how to describe some of these acts.
Sure. It's funny. The words that authors come up with to describe different anatomy parts are I think that is some of the most creative writing that I've found across the board. Right. In both MM and other romance, it's just it's so evocative. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting aspect of it. But in terms of the explicit nature of it, it's just, you know, it's trying to find the right balance of, I guess selling it, while you're still telling the story, getting into it enough to convince the listeners that this is, you know, a very passionate, scene happening right now. But, you know, because you're going back and forth between the narration and the characters, and sometimes they're, you know, moaning and groaning and this and that, and then you have to step back a little bit to describe either what they're thinking or feeling or you know their emotional state, and it's a little more removed and needs to be, you know, clearly explained and dug into, because these, you know, there's so many levels happening. Especially in the romance, you know, when you get more into the erotica, it's more about just the physical act, I found. But with the romance, it can get explicit, it can get erotic, but those scenes are still driving this relationship and driving this story that these two characters are on, or three or four, you know, the different storylines.
Right.
So you still need to tie those threads together and really get those emotional threads from beginning to end while still feeling it, because I mean let's face it, that's romance is steamy, and that's what a lot of people turn to it for.
As an author, it's very strange to sit back and listen to someone reading the sex scenes that you have penned in your lonely library.
So. Sure. It gives it a different kind of life.
Absolutely. So what's your process for preparing to narrate a book?
In general, once I've, you know, agreed to take on a book and scheduled that into my schedule, once I receive the manuscript, I'll also, when I receive the manuscript, I'll also ask from the author for just some general thoughts on their end about who these characters are, maybe any specific accents that come into play. But if I can latch on to what is in your mind as an author in terms of a couple major character traits, whether, you know, it's tied in with their profession or their background or just who they are in your mind, that gives me a place to start with. And then I will read through the manuscript and just take notes all along the way, because it's a lot of my work on the front end is just figuring out who these characters are. And if I can get a pretty solid picture in my mind about who they are, then that makes my job going forward a lot easier. It's tough. Sometimes you get, there are certain books where it's really, especially some of the romance books, they really focus on those two characters, and you don't see many characters on the sidelines. So that's, I guess, a simpler approach from my point of view, when there are a lot of sideline characters, like for instance, some of the books I've done with Josh Lanyon, a lot of those books are more in the mystery thriller bent. So they sometimes have a more procedural feel, like a, you know, like a Law and Order where something has happened and we've got to interview these people. We've got to find out what's going on. And we're interacting with these cops here and these victims there. So there are a lot of side characters, and it's, you know, my prep work is about, you know, nailing down who they are and making sure that even if they've got a, you know, a short scene, that the listener has a clear picture of them in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And then
get confused, obviously, when you're listening to dialogue.
Sure. I think one of the big things I look for are scenes with a lot of characters, because I've got to keep all of them straight so that the listener can keep them straight,
mm-hmm.
to make my recording process a lot more streamlined. So if I can get that done on the front end, it makes it go a lot more smoothly.
How do you keep track of all of the different voices when you assign them?
Usually, whenever I start, whenever a character talks for the first time, I'll take a little clip of that. It depends. Sometimes if there are a lot of characters, or if I'm starting a series, sometimes, and if authors have really strong point of view on them, sometimes I'll go back and forth and actually send some voice samples. And then take those and come to some agreement on that. Otherwise, in most cases, I'll stop my recording when I create these characters, take a little snippet of their first line or two, and keep that in another folder on my computer so I can refer to that, because sometimes it'll happen. There'll be a character in the first scene. You won't see them until much later in the book. It may be days later for me. If I'm recording a 10-hour book, and, you know, there's a character at the beginning on day one, I may not see him till the end of the week.
Right.
And I've
well,
maybe created.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And
yeah,
who knows? Yeah. There could be 20 other characters I've created between now and then.
Right.
So I always make sure to have a little clip on hand that I can refer to.
Where do you get your inspiration for your character voices? I mean, do you have a sort of set list to go to, or do you try to come up with new ones as you're reading books?
I try to keep it as fresh as I can, because there are certain stock characters I have in my head, but I don't want someone to listen to The Mermaid Murders and then listen to September and say, oh, that was that character from there. So that's where the prep work and the consultation with the author come in really handy at the beginning, mm-hmm. is so that I can get a really unique picture. Because, you know, from the outside, sometimes I'm still only one voice. And, you know, the listener's probably going to find similarities between certain characters. But if I can create a really unique picture in my mind of who these people are, then I think it really distinguishes them. Because even if, say, you've got five police officers and, you know, in different books, but they're going to be a little different. Even if they're maybe the gruff police type, somebody, you know, has a chink in his armor here, or, you know, somebody has a different relationship with this character there. And if you can pull on that stuff, then I think it really helps to distinguish them. That said, sometimes something will come to me where some character reminds me of someone in my life, be it a family member, a friend, somebody. I live in New York City, so I come across characters every day, riding the subway and just walking around. And I'll take out my phone and create a voice memo. Either if I can surreptitiously record somebody, or I've had the experience where I've walked down the street, overheard a conversation, taken out my phone and tried to imitate that voice because it was just so incredible and evocative that I said, I've got to use this in a book.
So. I went to a panel at DragonCon once. It was actually a whole bunch of Sesame Street people talking about how they come up with the different characters, and they talked about having sort of a mental Rolodex. And one
sure.
woman who she does, I've forgotten the characters that she does because I don't watch Sesame Street. I'm 50, but
yeah.
she is like, yeah. So I have Eartha Kitt, I have a cab driver, I have, you know, all these different people, and then I can think about a sentence that they said, and then that gets me into the right voice that I need for the character. I thought that was
fascinating. That's so great. I heard an interview with Hank Azaria. Daria once, who is an amazing voice actor, an actor in his own right. But he does a lot of voices on The Simpsons and in a lot of different work. But he was saying, I'm really, what it comes down to is I'm a terrible imitator. And so when I have a character to create, it's really an imitation of somebody very specific, but you don't see it as that person because I'm so bad at it. So, you know, so-and-so is my Arnold Schwarzenegger. So-and-so is my, you know, whoever it is. And so I thought that was a really interesting, perspective on his approach.
Working with you on September was a lot of fun because, I guess there were a couple of characters in particular that are my favorites. Every author, I'm sure, has their babies. And the one that I care about most probably in the long term is Joe, because he's based on a friend of mine, this man that I knew when I first moved to New York back in the 80s.
Oh, nice.
And so, and he was very Bostonian and, you wouldn't know it from reading September, but you find out in later books, he's got a very colorful background. And that's all based on my friend, Peter. And so it was most interesting to hear how that one came to life. And so I think you sent me a clip just of the first scene you did with Joe, and I really enjoyed that. Mm. And with Brandon, I remember mentioning that I thought like a young Matthew McConaughey was sort of who I had in mind.
Yes, so, and I like for the listeners, I love how you, when we first started talking, you actually sent me a clip of an interview with McConaughey as a young man when he was first starting, and that was very helpful for me. Because, like I was saying earlier, when an author has a strong point of view, I can work that in if it gels with what I see on the page. I love working that kind of thing in. It's always a balance because it's got to be honest enough from somewhere inside of me where I think I can bring that out, and I can see those aspects in the character. And I haven't had the experience where I've gotten a recommendation or an inspiration like that from an author where I haven't been able to work that in. I think, if you've seen that in your creation, it's going to come out on the page. And if I have that reference, then we can meet up in the middle in a much quicker and an easier way.
Right. Do any scenes stand out from September when you were narrating that were either difficult or presented a challenge?
Sure. You mentioned Joe. The party scene in Provincetown definitely stands out to me because there were a lot of new characters in that and colorful characters, and it was very alive. That scene was very alive. It really stands out in my mind because there's so much going on, there's so many new people, and of course it's a big turning point for the main characters as well. Right. So that one I have a very clear picture in my mind of those events. I have a picture of that house in my mind. It's almost as if I have the mind of the camera. If this was making the movie, I can see the camera moving through this house, following Brandon when he goes off with Rudy, staying mm-hmm. with David as he's talking with the group of men, and then when they come together. So I can play that back in my head. It was so vivid, and it was a challenge. Because
there are a lot of characters, and
they were new, and they, you only know a little bit about them, so that sometimes that's more of a challenge for me because I've got to dig more from my end. So it does give me freedom to make certain choices, but it's sometimes more difficult to keep them distinct. So.
Right.
So I do remember that being a challenge.
It's interesting because I think that's the only chapter that I had a request to change, and it's because two of the characters that show up for the first time in that chapter and then don't reappear are Rudy and Gerald. And I'm now almost done with the sequel to September, which is called Asylum, and that'll be out in a few months. But Rudy plays a very significant part in that book. He's not the main character, but he's got the largest secondary role. And Gerald is back to work his wiles and be his nasty self again. And I really liked the voice that you did for Gerald right away. I could completely see him coming back, you know, with that sort of little slimy voice. With Rudy, the only thing that had worried me about it is initially the character reminded me of, you mentioned Hank Azaria, but from Birdcage. Sure. You know, just kind of very, very flighty, which was fine for that setting. But knowing how important he was going to be in the future, we talked about that a bit. And I sent you a couple of chapters of Asylum. So I'm curious about, it was a lesson for me to know that, you know, if I have in mind that a character is going to be very important in the future, I should spend more time talking to you in advance so that I can explain, oh yeah, you know, this, think about what's sustainable long-term.
Sure. Here. Yeah, that was very important to me. And, you know, I try to do that stuff on the front end. Sometimes, you know, when you're starting a series like this, sometimes you don't, I don't know what's in your head for the future. So sometimes these kinds of things happen, and I really valued our discussion after that fact because it fleshed out that character more so in my mind instead of just having a small snapshot of who he was, because he's only in one scene. Right. He's only in one chapter. Yeah. And so you know, from my point of view, I wanted to make that snapshot stand out, knowing after the fact what will happen to him, and more of his journey and his arc really fleshed him out for me. And so that did change my approach in terms of just a deeper understanding of who he is as a character and where he's coming from and where he's going to, you know, travel to after that. So
I love the way it ended up, where, I mean, even though he's still kind of the bright party boy that he's supposed to be, you can hear the depth in his character, I think, when he's talking with Brandon. So I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I think it gives him more complexity, and I can't wait to see where he goes in the future.
Yeah. Well, this has been really fascinating. I hope that if you've stuck through all of the stops on the blog tour, that you've enjoyed all of these glimpses into the process of developing the September audiobook. It was a tremendous amount of fun for me to listen to it come to life, and I've certainly enjoyed working with you, Cale, and I hope that everyone will pick up the book and see what a fantastic job you did.
I hope so, too. I mean, it's a fantastic book, and I can't wait to see, I can't wait to read Asylum. I read it for myself and read it to all the listeners. Come on.
I will definitely be back. Now that you've got the characters in your mind, I hear your voice now as I'm writing their dialogue, so that works. That works great for
me.
Yeah. So this was a lot of fun. Thank you very much. I really appreciate everyone for listening. And thank you, Cale, for taking the time to be interviewed.
My pleasure. Thank you.